Welcome to the Music of America podcast, where every week we visit a different state in America and meet a different guest in the music industry. Every day, Monday through Friday, we begin in Alabama and we end in Wyoming. I'm your host, Tom Pollard. Let's talk music here on the Music of America. The Music of America podcast continues. We kick off the state of Utah in Salt Lake City. The Infinite Monkeys and Stephen Ford will be our guest, and we'll talk with Stephen about the Infinite Monkeys shortly after I talk to bass players. Bass players, The Bag is a high-quality leather gig bag family of products that are handmade in the United States with the finest craftsmanship and a beautiful, sophisticated, very cool overall appearance. They're made of some of the finest quality leather and cushion available and literally meant to last you a lifetime. They've got over 30 years in the leather industry and extremely proud to introduce this line of gig bags targeted to the skilled professional as well as the fun-seeking novice. Their hope is that you're going to love The Bag as much as they do. The Bag from Tony Vaughn Bass Bags. Now, you know it's good because Tony Vaughn is a bass player who also makes The Bag. So it's Tony Vaughn Bass Bags or just The Bag. You can find it at Musician's Friend, at Sweetwater, at Guitar Center, or go to www.TonyVaughn.com. The Infinite Monkeys. Stephen Ford, our guest here on the Music of America podcast. And first, I got to tell you what a Monkees fan I am, but those are the Monkees, not the Infinite Monkees. But I was jamming with some buddies of mine and my brother the other about a week or so ago, and I just started doing this vamping on this D, and I walked it down to a C, and I just started singing a song called She. And he said, "You pulled out the Monkees? You're pulling out the Monkees?" Like, yes, I am.
There's never a bad time to pull out the Monkees. Honestly, right. I thought they were a great group. Honestly, if you look at the documentaries about the group, you know, they were fascinating. I mean, there was a reunion tour that came through in the, what would it have been, early 90s, I think. And Mike Nesmith wasn't in the group because probably most people don't know he didn't need the money.
Right. Because his mama.
Yeah, his mother invented liquid paper.
Yeah.
You know, and they had a ton of money.
And I always thought he was the most talented of them because he wrote a lot of their music. He could play. Mm-hmm. You know, he wasn't a studio musician or an actor, a comedic actor trying to, you know, fit a role. He could actually write music and play music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, but there's no connection with the Monkees and the Infinite Monkees other than we're both fans.
Yeah, absolutely. The only connection is the word Monkees, right?
Yeah.
I created the name the Infinite Monkees because of the Infinite Monkey Theorem, and I'll kind of get into that a little later as we talk more about the genesis of the band.
Yeah.
But the Infinite Monkey Theorem states that if you had an infinite number of monkeys pounding away on an infinite number of typewriters, they'd eventually write Shakespeare.
I've heard that, yeah.
Yeah, so basically what I have done is put together an eclectic group of musicians basically pounding away on our instruments, hoping maybe one day to stumble upon the Beatles. Who knows?
We'll find the next sound. Because I think that's where music is right now. I think music is looking for the next sound, you know?
I think music right now is looking for anything different. Everything sounds the same right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. I try not to go down that rabbit hole because I could probably do a month of podcasts on it. I tell people this all the time. I don't listen to music anymore, except for music that comes across my desk here on the Music of America podcast, because this is good and it's fresh. And it's not synthetic, and it's from the soul, and it's from the heart, where music used to come from.
And that's absolutely
that's my soapbox. Yeah. I'm stepping down now.
You know, I mean, it's a great soapbox, I think. I mean, auto-tune is probably the greatest and worst thing that ever happened to the industry, right?
No kidding. Yeah.
I mean, it's wonderful because it helps you correct little errors that would have taken a singer, especially, hours and hours, maybe even days to replicate. You know, you mm-hmm. sing it again and again. You can't quite get it perfect, but you can fix it in a second now. So that's the great part of it, but it also turns, you know, mediocre. I think what it does more than anything else is it makes singers, I don't think they work as hard because they don't have to anymore, you know?
Right.
I mean, there are fewer and farther between, singers who have perfect pitch, things like that. But so, you know, electronic intervention, Pro Tools and such, you know, it's been an absolute revolution. And at the same time, it's been bad. So there are pros and cons to both, you know.
I read something on, it was something somebody, one of my musicians posted on one of my Facebook pages. I think the Music of America Facebook page. He said, don't equate talent and money. There's a lot of musicians that have a lot of money that have no talent or have limited talent. And there's a lot of talented musicians that aren't making any money. And I think,
absolutely. I mean, I think Spotify is the repository for a ton of talent with no money.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I just posted that myself the other day that we got to get you 30,000 downloads so you can make $100 this week, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, wow. I mean, it's, what is it now? 0.00458 per stream?
Last I saw was 00037, I think.
Oh, see, it's even
it's
worse.
It's gone down. Yeah. It might be 7. But anyway, the point was I did the equation. I did actually, my AI did the equation for me. I said, how many downloads do I have to get to make $100 on a song? And it was 30,000. 30,000 downloads. I said, you've got to be kidding.
And the economics there obviously are that it'll cost you $1,000 to produce that song that'll only make you $100.
Yeah.
So you're losing money every song.
Not the wisest business plan, you know.
You have to do it for the love. You really do.
Right.
You have to do it for the music. And that's pretty much what the Infinite Monkeys is.
Yeah.
We, you know, the group was formed, if you want me to get into it right away.
Yeah, for sure.
I had written, produced, and directed a short film in 2020, which is also what the Infinite Monkeys recent EP, Hindsight 2020, refers to.
Okay.
Anyway, I produced this film in 2020, and it was about two musicians, one who is an older rock star who is on his way to LA to sort of re-energize, kickstart his career again.
Uh-huh.
On the way, he picks up a hitchhiker, a female who is also a musician, who is also on her way to Los Angeles to start her career. And it's a short film about their small travel together and how they come together, both, you know, emotionally, physically, musically, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And before I started shooting, I realized I'm going to have to write some music for this. Both of these main characters are musicians. I'm going to have to actually write some music that will appear in this film. So I did that, and I produced the soundtrack for it, and I brought all of these musicians together to make it happen, and producers that I wanted to work with, and this and that, this bass player, that drummer, this guitarist, so forth and so on, and the two main actors were singers, and they sang the songs, so I didn't have to deal with that, but I had so much fun creating the soundtrack that I said to myself, you know, now's a good time with Spotify and distributors like DistroKid and so forth. Now's a good time to dust off some of the songs that I'd written over the years. Some of them for bands that just didn't fit the aesthetic of the band, or for lead singers that it just wasn't right for them, or for female voices, for instance, and they weren't for me.
Right.
Or just, you know, songs that were outside of whatever I was doing at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I had all these songs archived, and I thought, you know what, now's a good time to release them. So I started working with this producer, a fantastic producer by the name of Becky Willard, and she pointedly said to me, So how are you going to release this? And I said, well, what do you mean? She says, well, are you going to be a solo artist? Are you going to form a, and when she said solo artist, I went, it's not really who I am. Are you going to form a band? And I thought, oh God, not that again. And you know what I
Like,
mean.
Lord, no, please.
Yeah, well, the thing that I have always said about bands is that the hardest thing about it, having a band or being in a band, is trying to coordinate the lives of four or five different people into one cohesive direction. It's almost impossible. And when you become an adult and you have other responsibilities, it's nigh impossible. I mean, honestly, anyone who's listening out there who wants to form a band or is in a band or whatever, do it when you're a kid because you have no responsibilities and it's the easiest time.
There's this
But
this band I met in South Carolina. I hope is listening right now. Dazer, pay attention. This man knows what he's talking about. These
yeah, I
guys,
mean
these guys,
it's
no, these kids are good. They got it. You know, they got it, and they're young.
and that's great. And like I
If
say,
they can
now
hold
is the
on to it.
time, you know, for them, now is the time. So, you know, I said, I really don't want to form a band. But then I remembered that there was a group in the probably mid to late 80s, started by a guy by the name of Alan Parsons. And for those who don't know, Alan Parsons was a recording engineer at Abbey Road Studios, who, by the way, mixed the Mortal Things, which was the first single off the Infinite Monkeys' recent EP.
No kidding. Kudos to you, man.
I made sure that that was one thing that I really wanted to do. It was kind of a bucket list item, you know. Anyway, and I worked with a great sound engineer there, and I really think that Mortal Things is one of the, you know, one of the crown jewels of our release. But Alan Parsons produced two of the greatest rock albums of all time, the Abbey Road album by the Beatles and Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon. Now he's also a musician himself, and he wanted to release some of his own music. And I think he came up with the same dilemma. You know, did he's not a singer, he's not a front man, he didn't want to be. And so he put together a project and it became the Alan Parsons Project. And for those who may remember, you know, music of the early 90s, I think, maybe late 80s, they had a
70s.
number one hit.
70s is when
Well,
they
they,
came out with the System of Dr. Tar and Professor Feather and the Raven and
yeah, but it, but their number one hit, The Eye in the Sky, I believe was either late 80s or early
right. It
90s.
was right.
Yeah, and but it was never really a band. It was a project. He would, you know, decide, I want this guitarist, I want that drummer, you know, I'm going to work with different people on, and I don't think that, and I don't know for a fact, but I don't think that the lineup stayed the same from album to album. And he released, they released like 12 albums. And I thought, you know what? That's the model I want to look to. And that is again where the name, the Infinite Monkeys, comes from. You know, it's a bunch of different musicians coming together to try and produce music, you know.
As soon as you
And
started explaining it, the whole light bulb thing in my head goes off. Like, that's why it was called the Alan Parsons Project and not the Alan Parsons Band.
exactly.
Well, I'll be darned.
Exactly. Because it was literally just a project band. It was a project, you know, it was a project every single single, you know.
Well, I mean, technically, back to go full circle on this, I guess, weren't the Monkees a project? They wanted Americanization of Help and Hard Day's Night,
Yeah,
you know?
you could definitely say that because they were formed for a purpose, for a TV show, for yeah, I mean they were definitely a project. They bristled at that, but they knew who they were, you know.
It was what it was. Well, that's clever,
Yeah.
man, how you came together. And I love that too, that because I've been in bands, you know, and I've done my penance, Lord. I don't need another band, you know.
Well, I see, and I've been in so many bands doing so many things. I mean, country, metal, jazz, you know, classical combos or whatever, you know, punk groups, just grunge, just everything you can think of. And I didn't want to be limited with this group in, you know, genre wise. I think you get a little bit too, for instance, Motley Crue, for instance, okay?
Yes.
They are limited by who they are. You know, they can't do a jazz song, but the Infinite Monkeys can. In fact, Underground is kind of a jazz fusion song. And I wanted to be able to do that. So Long, My Friend is pop punk, and that's different. And Mortal Things is more hard rock, heavy metal. Rose is more of a sort of a power ballad. You know, everything is different. And I wanted to be able to go ahead.
No, I was going to comment that I noticed that, like, when you talk about your background, your musical influences, you can hear that in every different song. I mean, you present that in your music that, oh yeah, you can't really say that Stephen Ford's a punk rocker, not after you hear Underground, but you can't hear Underground and say he's just a jazz guy, because then you're going to hear his cover of, you know, Smithereens Tune or something, you know?
Yeah,
and I got
exactly.
thinking, when you're talking about ballads, I got thinking what, was it Lou Gramm from Foreigner going into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame finally, and what launched them from superstar to megastar was a ballad that he hates singing. I Want to Know What Love Is.
Yeah, and that's a great song off the Foreigner 4 album.
Yeah.
I love that song.
And it's this, and he said, I just read this today, it's a song he's probably going to have to sing at the Hall of Fame induction, and he doesn't like that. It's not their best work, and it's not their best work. Some of their best work was before 4, you know, I think.
But, oh, it was. Yeah.
But it's that.
There are a lot of really good stuff, but I mean, let's be honest. There were some bangers on 4.
Oh yeah.
Like Urgent, right?
Yeah, right. Was a Jukebox Hero? Was Jukebox Hero?
Jukebox Hero was on that one. Yeah. Absolutely.
Which I think is probably, to me, that's probably my favorite Foreigner song, you know. And I'm a Foreigner guy from way back, you know.
And I think they're a highly underrated band. I mean, I think that they came up at a time when there were just better groups, and they got sort of lost in the wash.
Now,
did
they splinter off somebody? Didn't they used to be Free and then splinter
off? Well, Graham, I mean, he went solo.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah, yeah. But no, before that, though, before it was Foreigner, I thought it splintered off something, and I was thinking it was Free. But maybe I don't know. No, so I'm showing my age there. Well, to get on track and back to us and you, you brought up Underground. And it's the first song we're going to hear. So tell me about the components of Underground, what that's about, how that was built, how that came to you.
Oh, gosh. You know, that's a good question. It was the first song that I wrote for this release. I was kind of playing with this C add 9 and F major 7 kind of chord progression, and it just sounded really jazzy to me, and I thought, you know, maybe I want to write something a little jazzy, and of course there's a little bit of rock to it, so it's more fusion than strict jazz, but you know, I've always been a fan of bands like Steely Dan, for instance. You know.
Yeah.
And I mean, the brilliance of Steely Dan, they were so far ahead of their time. And I thought, you know, this would be kind of a little nod to Steely Dan. And I wrote it for a female voice. You'll notice that it's a different singer. And again, that's part of the Infinite Monkeys aesthetic, right?
Right, right.
I worked with a brilliant singer by the name of Angie Petty. And she's just got the most incredibly smooth voice anyone's ever heard, right? I mean, she's a very Karen Carpenter-esque voice. And I basically, you know, I did the guitars for it. A friend of mine named Nate Smith did some rhythm guitar for it. And there's a jazz bassist. And I'm kind of forgetting his name right now. But he contributed the bass. And it was a great melding of different talents. And I'm pretty proud of that one.
Do you hear the parts in your head?
I do. I hear all of them in my head.
That's what I was wondering. I kind of got that you hear the parts and then you know who the talent is, because you know this gal can carry that vocal. This guy can carry that bass run. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you a funny story. I didn't know Angie Petty. I knew of her, but I hadn't worked with her before. And I talked to a guitarist friend of mine and said, who do you know that does really smooth jazz vocals, female voice? And he gave me two possibilities. And they were the two I was going to reach out to, actually. So I thought, okay, well, I'm not as dumb as I look. And I reached out to Angie, and she was the one who was really interested in it. And we got her in the studio. And like I said, I was working with Becky Willard, producing it. And she added some of that really subtle keyboard to it. Becky did. And it's honestly, I'm pretty proud of that one. It came about. It's funny. It's one of those songs that comes about like a baby birth, like fully formed, right? Uh-huh. It's a fully formed. It started out as a chord progression, but the lyrics and the music evolved together. And by the time I was done writing the music, the lyrics were done too. And it was there, you know?
Yeah.
But to quickly get back to what you were asking me, I don't know how many other people can do this, but I dream in music.
Oh,
and
wow.
I don't, the sad part is I don't remember it all. There are times when I get to that part where I kind of lucid dream and I'm starting to wake up and I go, okay, remember this. And I never remember it.
There is a trick to that. And I can't remember what it is, but if Google it, there's my brother's a psychiatrist or psychologist rather. And he said, there's a trick to remembering a dream. And I think it's when you wake up, keep your eyes closed and retrace the memory in your head as best as you can. And I think that's the exercise that will help you remember. In the case of music, I did have a guest on the show. She was the same way. All of her music comes from her dreaming. So she's got recorders, notepads, all that stuff on her nightstand. And she'll wake up in the middle of the night, gibber something down or whatever, record something and go right back to sleep. And then wake up the next day and say, what did I do? Try and make something out of it.
Yeah, that's kind of how it works for me, but like you said, yes, I can hear when I'm writing music, I can hear all the parts in my head. Uh-huh. At some point, for instance, if I just start out with lyrics, I will start to hear a little bit of a melody in my head. And as the melody progresses, I'll hear the guitar come in. Okay, this is what it should sound like. Or I'll hear the bass line. Whatever it is that begins the song, if it's just a bass line, other things will sort of appear in my head. And I hear the whole thing, the whole arrangement in my head before I ever pick up an instrument.
That's something. We're going to hear the first sample of that too, right here. The Infinite Monkeys with Stephen Ford, our guest here on the Music of America podcast. And the first song, the one we've been talking about, the song is called Underground.
Dark falls and silver rain comes falling down. Light pools and neon pastel, the misty underground. Silent street lamps light my way. One tomb and all the shadows know my name. Spirits all night long to ease the pain. Save yourself is all they say. And all that wants to feel that familiar sound of the memories welling up from the underground. And denial echoes out from the other side of the chasm excavated by my lies. I hear voices screaming in my head alone. shadows fade away. The spirits shroud my mind and numb my soul to hide the shame. Rising upward from the dark. And all at once I feel the familiar sound of the memories welling up on the underground. Out from the other side of the chasm excavated by my lies, I hear voices screaming in my head. Alone, come
Underground with the Infinite Monkeys here on the Music of America podcast. Our guest, Stephen Ford from the Infinite Monkeys, and we'll talk about one of his more pop, punk, rock kind of, we'll talk about it in just a little bit. But first, I want to talk about this really cool thing that's going on called Flash Jam. You discover your own celebrity at the newest, hottest, most interesting, fun live music show. It hit the scene in about 50 years called, again, Flash Jam. Whether you perform live music, or you enjoy watching live music, Flash Jam has something for everyone. It's a dynamic way for musicians to come together, perform, and compete for recognition and even prizes. Whether you're new to the stage or you're an experienced musician, Flash Jam provides a really exciting platform to collaborate and showcase your talents. I'll give you an example. Let's say Flash Jam is in Salt Lake City, and we look at their set list, and they reach out to Stephen and say, "Hey, Stephen, Flash Jam's going to be at Tom's Bar and Grill." And Stephen says, "Oh, look, here's Hey 19. I've always wanted to play keyboards on that." And then I look at him and said, "I've always wanted to sing that." My brother looks at it and says, "I want to play drums." And John looks at it and says, "I want to play bass on that." And we don't know each other. We've never done this song together. But we come together at Flash Jam and we learn our parts beforehand. So when we get together at Flash Jam, we perform together. So the musicians play these hit songs with other random musicians who share a passion for the same song, not necessarily being in the band. Now, existing bands can compete as well, and they can perform some of those same iconic songs and display their talents and display their new and emerging abilities or whatever. And then the audience participates by voting. You don't even have to be a musician. You can just sit there and vote and say, "I like these guys. I didn't like these guys. I like these guys." It's fun for everybody. It's called Flash Jam. It's really cool, really exciting. It's in Colorado, and it's coming to a market near you. Flash Jam, welcome to the show. So I kind of butchered "So Long, My Friends" in terms of defining the type of song that is, but I thought pop punk sounded pretty close.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's straight up pop punk. It's kind of I have to say it's a little bit of a watered down version, but not too bad say a Blink 182, something like that. Uh-huh. You know, a kind of an homage to a band like a Blink 182. I'll be straight honest with you. It's a nonsense song.
Yeah, it was a Jimmy Eat World song to me. You know.
Yeah, I mean that's another comp. But like I say, the thing is it's it's like American Pie. It's a nonsense song. It means everything and nothing
at the same time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, but there's when I first started listening to it, I thought this was like you lost a friend and you're going to the next plane. So this is like a funeral dirge of sorts.
That's a common misconception. Yeah. Absolutely not.
As I listened in on, fact, I'm like, no, I'm wrong here. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. No. In fact, more than anything, it's kind of talking about the world and saying, "Forget this. I'm out of here."
Yeah. Yeah. But not like out of no. here. Just you're just checking out. Like I don't need this.
Yeah. I'm done with this. You know, it's kind of a musical version of that old saying, stop the world, I want to get off.
Yeah. Perfect. Oh, perfect. I get it. Yeah. I mean, that's why I don't do bands, you know. I'm done, you know. I'll get together with my friends. We'll jam. We'll play music. We'll jam on Neil Young words by Neil Young for 45 minutes. You know, we'll just sit back and jam on it and just have fun with it. But the minute one of them says, "Man, why don't we book ourselves and play out?" That's when I'm like, look at the time. Gotta go. Gee, I've stuck my finger in that fan too many times, man.
Yeah. Well, you know, So Long, My Friend was a song that I wrote many years ago, and I had to kind of update it for the modern world.
Yeah.
The first sort of lead into the chorus used to be the ozone layer's looking bad, but think of all the fun we've had so long. And I updated it to be global warming's looking bad. You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's a little political. It's a little, you know, sort of a slice of, you know, what's going on in the world, but it's mostly just a punk jam song.
Yeah. It's not really preachy and in your face and condemnation or anything like that. It's just kind of mm-hmm. fun.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what it's supposed to be. And that's, I think, kind of the heart of pop punk, you know. It's either really angry or really upbeat while having some serious notes behind it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's, boy.
I mean, look at Green Day's American Idiot, right?
Right.
I mean, if you listen to the song, da 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 da, it's a fun song.
Sure.
But it's lambasting almost everybody in America, you know?
Well, the song that gets me is
a backhanded compliment.
Numb is such a dysfunctional song. It's about such a dysfunctional family, you know, and it's so angry and it's so dead on. And then you've got American Idiot, you know,
yeah,
entirely different and the same and different. And you put those sciences, if you would, kind of together.
I tried to, but you know, I shot for more of the sort of fun, upbeat, rocky vibe.
Yeah.
You know, and honestly, I think it's one of my best solos, actually.
No kidding. Cool.
I did all of the electric guitars. Again, a friend of mine, Nate Smith, added this really nice octaved guitar, rhythm guitar, and in some ways it really makes the song. That guy, I gotta tell you, the one reason that I keep playing and keep writing music and keep recording with that guy is that he has this incredible ability to add. He's like that cook who doesn't cook, but he adds the final spice that makes the dish, you know?
That's funny. That's perfect. Yeah. I'm that cook. At least I say I am. And so far, people like it. It's like when I make my lasagna, put hot Italian sausage in with my sweet Italian sausage, and it gives it just enough kick, or it's just enough sweetness, depending on what you're listening or tasting for. Mm-hmm. But that's
well, Nate. I have to say, Nate has his own band. It's called Higher Law, and he writes his own music and everything. But when I collaborate with him, like I say, he's that guy who adds just the perfect sound that you hadn't anticipated.
Yeah.
That makes the song. So yeah, he's one of my good friends and a great collaborator.
Well, that leads me to one of my favorite production questions, but I'm going to save it for after the song. Okay. So since we're talking about So Long, My Friend, we're going to play So Long, My Friends. We'll do that now. This is the Infinite Monkeys with Stephen Ford and the song So Long, My Friend.
Halley's Comet, Hubble's Eye, Cherry Cola, Apple Pie. Global warming's looking bad, but think of all the fun we've had. So long, see you on the other side. My
So long, my friend, Stephen Ford with the Infinite Monkeys here on the Music of America podcast. I'm your host, Tom Pollard. It's really this simple. Buy Kitty's litter box. Open the box. Place litter in the box. Introduce the box to your cat. After the cat has done their business for about a month or so, close the box and throw it away. That's it. Just close the box, grab the handle of this biodegradable box, and throw the whole thing away. It's perfect for traveling with your favorite feline. Affordable, convenient. And it's the one thing I really didn't like about having cats, and I don't know how it became my job, but I hated cleaning the litter box. Kitty's litter box were around 20 years ago. Who knows? Maybe I would still have cats. Kitty's litter box. Kittyslitterbox.com, all lowercase, all one word, kittyslitterbox.com. Order today. It's perfect. Now, we were talking with Stephen Ford from the Infinite Monkeys a moment ago about production. I teased that I have a production question. We were talking about the Beatles earlier and about how wonderful they are and just production qualities in general and about the one ingredient that makes the spice, or the one spice that makes the soup that much better or whatever. Wings came out with a reissue of an album called Band on the Run. I'm sure you're familiar with. The reissue is called Underdubbed. My brother was listening to it and called me up. He says, I want you to ask some of your musician friends about this. He goes, when, and here's the question, if you're ready, when do you know a song is done?
Oh, wow. That's a good question. Isn't that something? I'm not sure I have an answer for that. Because sometimes I will listen to a song that has already gone out and thought, oh, I should have added this. You know, there's a space in this area for like a high violin or something like that. And, or, you know, on that bend, I should have gone, instead of a half bend, I should have gone a full bend or something. Yeah. I should have bend and released. I'll tell you. That is a question you should never ask certain musicians, I'm forgetting his name, the lead singer of the Beach Boys.
Brian Wilson. Yeah.
Brian Wilson. Yeah. I mean, I don't think he can answer that question. Right. He is such a perfectionist. I mean, he would spend hours and hours in the studio, you know, agonizing over a harmony or what have you. Mm-hmm. I honestly think that in some cases, We talk about musical geniuses and how they may be, you know, riding that edge of maybe a little mental disorder, right? Sure. I think what happens is that those musicians, artists in general, really, who are perfectionists, are driven mad by perfection, by their drive for perfection.
Yeah.
Because there is no perfection in art. I think you can make it as perfect as you can, but if perfection is something that you have to have, it'll drive you crazy. So when is a song done? I think when you hear the sound that was in your head, like mine, then it's done. But you can continue to listen to it and go, oh, you know what I should have done. You can do that forever.
I think that's what happened with Band on the Run. I think they produced it and said, this is really good. And then another producer came in and said, let's add this to Jet. Let's add this to Let Me Roll It. Let's add this. And they're like, yeah. So it goes from to great, or great to magnificent, you know?
Well, yeah. And as you say, a different ear will hear a different thing, exactly, right? Exactly. So, your producer will produce it this way. And then you listen, have another producer listen to it, and they'll say, you know, we should cut the frequency here, or we should, like you say, add a violin.
Or hold this out for 4 measures.
Yes. Or just drag this section out a little bit longer, maybe another full measure, something like that. Everyone's going to hear something a little bit different, which is also why, by the way, you cannot listen to the masses who want to say, you know, this is what you should have done with your music, or yeah, I like this, but you should have done that. I think you have to produce the music for yourself.
Yeah.
And I think that it's finished when you're finished with it, and it's right when you think it's right. But if you listen to the billions of opinions that are online right now, you know, you'll drive yourself crazy again.
It's like a child. You raise it as best as you can. And when you're done, you're satisfied because you can't undo everything you've taught your child. You know, so it's out
there. And there'll be people like that'll sit there and
say, there'll be people that say, well, you should have done this as a parent. You should have parented this way.
Sure.
Yeah, but I didn't.
Well, you know, and like a child, you have to release it when it's ready and you have to trust that it will do what it's supposed to do. Right.
Yeah.
And that's like music. You release it and you hope that it finds an audience, that it will resonate with a certain kind of people. For instance, I know that Underground will not resonate with the same audience as So Long, My Friend, and vice versa.
Right.
But I hope that there are enough people that say to themselves, but you know, the Beatles, they didn't do the same thing all the time. Madonna didn't do the same thing all the time, right? And why were their careers so long and so influential? Because they weren't that same sound all the time. Yeah. And I hope that people, you know, are looking, especially nowadays, we talked about it.
Yeah.
I hope that people are looking for some variety, for something different.
Speaking of something different, you have a different take on a Smithereens song. And you wanted to tell me a story about the drummer. The song is called Blood and Roses. And I'd be honest with you, I wasn't familiar with it until I heard it from you guys. So I wouldn't know compared to the original, because I just didn't listen to a lot of Smithereens back in the day. So tell me your drummer story.
Well, okay. So we talked about how the band was formed. And I also said that, you know, I didn't want to form a static band. Well, on this song, I pulled in a drummer from a previous band, somebody that I hadn't talked to in a long time. But I one day I just kind of said to myself, I wonder if he's on Facebook. So I searched for him. I found him. We reconnected. And honestly, he's one of the easiest musicians I've ever worked with. And you know that a good working relationship is not the same as working with the most talented people.
Right.
Right. He's a good drummer, but he's also great to work with. Right.
Uh-huh.
I worked with a drummer that I nearly literally got into a fist fight with. He was 6'5", I'm 5'6". And after one practice, we nearly got into a fist fight.
Wow.
The drummer that I used on this song, his name's Jason Larcher, and he's just one of the greatest people I've ever met. And you know, if I tell him, you know, I want a flam here, he'll do it instead of saying, no, I don't feel that. You know?
Yeah.
You know, if I want you to have a sort of a machine gun fill right here, he'll go, okay, is this what you want?
So what do you want? What do you think of this? Or what do you think of this?
Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly.
Give me his name again, because we had a little dropout there, I think.
His name is Jason Larcher.
Larcher, okay.
Yeah. And again, one of the greatest people I've ever been in a band with. He had to quit a band that I was in because he had to go to work. You know, like I said, it's hard to coordinate the lives of four or five different people all at the same time. And we hadn't seen each other since he dropped out of the band. And we got together. And honestly, now the song was released a while ago. It was recorded even farther back, about a year ago. And we have lunch together all the time now, and he works close by. That was kind of a fortunate rekindling of a good friend relationship.
That's so cool, man. Well,
yeah,
he's the drummer on the cover of the song, the Smithereens cover song we're going to hear next. And the song is called Blood and Roses. Why that song?
Yeah. Blood and Roses is I think a highly underrated song. It was a minor hit for the Smithereens. Mm-hmm. It's kind of I think it hit during the grunge era, but was kind of more beatnik, if you will.
Okay.
If I recall, the band is from, what's that artist community in New York City?
Oh, Greenwich, Greenwich Village.
Yeah, I think they're from Greenwich, I think. And they had kind of a different sound, and I really loved their sound. They worked with Suzanne Vega at one point, and
I forgot about that. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. And they just had a great sound. And the song was written by the late great Pat DiNizio, and I always thought that it could be kicked up a little bit, you know. They used relatively clean guitars. I wanted to distort them. I wanted to sort of rock it out a little bit. I wanted to kick up the tempo a little bit. Yeah. I ended up not actually changing the tempo. It's actually pretty true to the original. I wanted to do that, but it just kind of fell in the pocket. The fact is, Pat DiNizio wrote a fantastic song. And I just hope that this is a worthy
homage.
Tribute.
Yeah,
a worthy tribute to Pat DiNizio.
Cool. We'll give it a listen, The Infinite Monkeys and Blood and Roses, here on the Music of America podcast. Blood and Roses with the Infinite Monkeys on the Music of America podcast. Before we launch into the last segment of the show, Steve, we call it Steve or Steven? I've been calling you Steven.
It's Steven. Yeah.
Okay.
I've never been fond of Steve. And I can usually tell who doesn't know me by whether or not they call me
funny.
Steven.
So my one of my best friends in Vermont is Michael, and my brother is Mike. And if I call Mike Michael, then he thinks I'm pissed at him. And if I call Michael Mike, he thinks I'm talking about my brother. So that's funny. So before we go into shameless self-promotion, the last segment of the show, there was something else you wanted to say about Blood and Roses that we just heard.
Yeah, it's really funny. You had talked a little bit about the Beatles earlier.
Yeah.
And I had talked about Abbey Road with regard to the Alan Parsons Project and Mortal Things, our first release single. I used a technique on Blood and Roses called ADT. Are you familiar with ADT?
No.
It's automated double tracking. Okay.
Never
sometimes
heard of
called auto. Yeah, it's called sometimes called automatic double tracking.
Okay.
It was an analog technique that was invented by Abbey Road Studios for John Lennon.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Yeah, John Lennon got so tired of constantly singing his double tracks and you know, hours and hours of hurting his voice, that they developed a way to double track, but if you're familiar with techniques for double tracking, it was a second recording, but it was like a millisecond delayed. And they did it all with tape machines. Now there's an ADT plugin. You can actually get an ADT plugin that is based on the Abbey Road technique.
No, this is throwing me way back in my way back machine. But back when I was in radio, radio commercials sometimes had this effect, okay, a phaser kind of effect.
Yeah.
And I mastered that technique. And it's by playing, recording, hi, my name is Tom, and then recording that and playing them at the same time, but you kind of tap on the other reel while it's recording on a third source. So you have my name is Tom, it's like, hi, my name is Tom, but it had like either an echo if you slowed it down too much, but if it was in parallel, you'd have this wavy, wazy, I don't know what the word was, but it was a really cool synthesized sound without having to run it through a synthesizer, I guess is what we were doing.
So many cool recording techniques, phasing, ADT, overdubbing were created in the tape reel-to-reel tape era, right? It's sad that some of the music today doesn't have that sort of warmth that those old recordings have. And I think a lot of those techniques have been lost. Like I said, we sort of revived ADT for this particular song. And I think it really sort of, it thickens my voice a little bit.
Well, we started this off a little bit on the bandwagon. We may as well wind it up on a little bit of the bandwagon too. And I think part of that is production costs. When you look at production costs, when it costs X number of dollars to put out a single, much less an EP, much less an album, much less a video, much less whatever, the production costs have mounted. So technology has found a way to cut some of those production costs, because at the end of the day, the record company wants to make as much money as they can, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's why everybody's in business. We're in business not to lose money. We're in business to make money. So a way of making money is to cut costs. And to cut costs, you use modern technology. But you lose just a little. It's like I play through a tube amp, and every time I try and play through a solid-state amp, I just want to blow my brains out. You know, you get all these really cool special effects from some of these solid-state amps, but it's got like a ceiling to it. It doesn't have the total warmth. That's what I hear. And I think that is maybe what happened with technology and music as well. And that's why we don't use tape, because we can digitally produce things so much faster, so much easier. You know, you lose a little quality. Mm-hmm. You lose a little quality. So what? You know, make it up in another 100,000 record sales or whatever. Okay.
Right.
off the soapbox again, and here we go. Shameless self-promotion. Tell us about the Infinite Monkeys, how we find them, how we support you, how we can find your music, where we find your music. Where can we see you this summer?
Well, we're not touring this summer. As I've said, it's not really a touring group. I have thought about putting together, musicians to support the album, but at this time, that's not really in the cards.
Yeah.
The Infinite Monkeys are on Instagram and Facebook and TikTok and, who am I missing? X, Twitter. Yeah. We're also on all of the streaming services, Spotify, Amazon Music, Apple Music, YouTube Music. You can find us at all your streaming destinations.
Do you have videos? Do you have videos on YouTube?
Not at the present time. Okay. No, which is kind of ironic for somebody that does, small short films.
Right. we go full circle again.
Yeah. But I would really encourage people who are looking for something eclectic and different to pull up our music. The recent EP is Hindsight 2020. There are mm-hmm. five songs, including the cover of The Smithereens' Blood and Roses. You've heard three of the songs, and there are two extra songs. The first three releases, and then what were two bonus songs, including Blood and Roses. And I'm pretty proud of everything that went out. So, hopefully you give it a listen and contact us on social media if you want to comment.
And just remember, we only need 30,000 downloads to get $100.
Yeah, just 30,000 to make 1/10 of the production cost.
There we go. I like the way you think, Stephen. Buddy. Stephen Ford, our guest again today from the Infinite Monkeys here on the Music America podcast from Salt Lake City, kicking off our visit to Utah tomorrow. Join us for Deanne, just Deanne, singer, songwriter, and a backstage manager. She'll be with us here tomorrow here on the Music of America podcast. You've been listening to the Music of America podcast. If you like today's show, please go to the website at www.musicofamericapod.com or our Music of America podcast Facebook page. Like us and follow the show and episodes. We tally the votes of all our shows, and the most listened to shows will be rebroadcast on our best of shows at the end of the season. I look forward to having you with us again and listening to the Music of America podcast.